And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. So recently, in the past few months, there's been a flurry of discussion and interest in climate circles around the topic of hydrogen, motivated by fossil fuel industries trying to take advantage of the situation to keep making money. In a recent show, we discussed the various kinds of production methods for hydrogen. And those production methods are given colors, right? So there's gray hydrogen, where you're producing hydrogen from fossil fuels with attendant carbon dioxide emissions. There's quote-unquote blue hydrogen, where you have the same process, except you try to capture the carbon dioxide and bury it somewhere, has its own problems. But the final and the most attractive production method for hydrogen for climate hawks is to use renewable electricity to crack our favorite substance in the world called water, to get hydrogen out of water. So that's it. So the idea is that we want to use this green hydrogen in the best thoughtful way. And to talk about that, we have with us an expert who has recently published a report called Reclaiming Hydrogen as a Renewable Fuel. It's published under the auspices of earthjustice.org, which is, as they say, the planet's lawyer. We have one of the authors of that report with us today. We're pleased to introduce Sarah Gerson. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good, good. Sarah, I should say, is a senior attorney at Earth Justice and is well-learned in the topic we're going to talk about. So, Sarah, tell me, the question of green hydrogen, did I get the whole rainbows of hydrogen correct? And if I did, can you tell us about how we should use green, you know, the right kind of hydrogen to help us fight climate change? What should we be doing?
Well, our first priority needs to be getting off of the dirty hydrogen that industry relies on today. You mentioned gray hydrogen in your opening remarks, and this gray hydrogen that produces hydrogen from fossil methane gas is the way that industry is producing almost all of the hydrogen that is a feedstock at oil refineries and fertilizer plants and other industrial facilities. So step number one is replace that hydrogen with something that you can produce without destabilizing the climate. And that means transitioning to green hydrogen to displace our current hydrogen demand.
Go ahead, Mariah.
Just to clarify, there's no way. So there are some processes that require gray hydrogen. There's sort of no way around it, right? It's not simply a matter of.
They require hydrogen, Mariah.
Sorry, we require hydrogen, right? There's no way around it. They need that hydrogen. And so at least replacing the gray hydrogen with green hydrogen is better. Because I definitely am struggling with this idea of green hydrogen, even, you know, I don't love it. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's green. Maybe it's better, but it still uses a lot of water. And, to me, it doesn't seem like a good alternative to wind, water, solar. But I think the point is that we can't use wind, water, and solar for everything. And this is one area where we do need to use hydrogen. And so at least it should be green. Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, you can definitely spend time interrogating the existing sources of hydrogen demand. So for instance, the biggest source of hydrogen demand in the United States today is oil refineries that use hydrogen to take sulfur out of diesel. As we transition to a zero emissions economy and stop relying on diesel to fuel our trucks, that source of hydrogen demand should go away. So that's something to celebrate. But there are some sources of hydrogen demand that will probably stick around, like the hydrogen that they use to make your hydrogenated margarine, which is not as large of a source of demand, but, you know, it's it's one that people can relate to a little bit.
Is that like the hydrogenated oils? That's what that is, right? Uh-huh. Which are terrible for you anyway.
Right. So maybe we should be using less of it.
Yeah.
But the point is there are existing uses for hydrogen. I think, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, hydrogen is used a little bit in steel production? Or is that that's the high temperature we'll talk about later. It's not directly used, say, in the fertilizer industry. It's directly used in the chemical process to generate fertilizer, right?
Yeah, so fertilizer is another example of the existing demand. Steel is a little bit different, so I'd be happy to talk more about that. But using hydrogen in steel would require changes to how we make steel.
And so I guess, Mariah, what you're touching on is this idea that, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, is that if we get this good hydrogen, quote-unquote good hydrogen, the green hydrogen, and we replace all of the existing industrial demand for it, which comes out of refineries and fertilizers, okay? And you still have some leftover green hydrogen. It seems what you want to do is to put on your, get your magnifying glass out and go looking for uses for industries that cannot electrify their process, right? And that's where you want to spend, and I think, Sarah, I'm fascinated with this idea that for the foreseeable future, you're not going to have a battery on your container ship sailing across the Pacific, right? That's just not going to happen anytime soon. But it's conceivable you could use hydrogen, right, as a fuel. So then becomes, that's an example of something that's not easy to electrify, right? But you would use, is that fair? Tell me more about that kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's step two after you displace the existing demand for fossil fuel derived hydrogen. Because there are some sectors of the economy that we don't quite know how we're going to decarbonize. And those are, generally speaking, the sectors that don't have a way to plug in to a renewable electric grid. A container ship that crosses the ocean is a great example of that. The steel industry is another great example of that. And so we do see a potential for green hydrogen to help get the climate pollution out of the steel industry, both by producing the high heat that you need to create steel, and also because hydrogen can be an input into the chemical processes you need, and displace some of the other fossil fuels that are used in steelmaking today.
I mean, that's just an interesting way to think about it, is that if you can plug your process into the wall outlet and use electricity, like, for example, cooking your food, right, or heating your home with a heat pump, you don't need hydrogen for that. But you're out looking for things like there. I guess the other fascinating one is aviation, right? And there's no way to plug your airplane into the ground. They don't have cords that long, right? And so how do you, you're not going to be able to put a battery probably for a long haul flight, but hydrogen might work, right? Another one of these places where hydrogen is a potential, I think you wrote it in the reports, are a tool to decarbonize these other industries, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the reasons why we advise people to explore using hydrogen to decarbonize these other sectors with a little bit of caution is that we don't know whether their solutions are out there. And we don't even know what else you might be able to accomplish with batteries in the future, because people are developing ways of using battery electric airplanes for short haul flights that are beyond the imaginations of what people would have expected just a few years ago. And so direct electrification is a growing piece of the pie, and you know, who knows where it will reach next.
Well, I think that's an interesting, that's an important point, that the tech, all the technology is evolving. And that, I mean, I always had this idea, naively, I suppose, I mean, you could just make green hydrogen and put it in a big tank and then use it to make electricity when you needed it. So it was a great battery storage. But for example, recently, these guys, I think it's called Form Energy, they have this iron oxide method of storing huge amounts of energy for weeks at a time, right? And they, therefore, you don't need the hydrogen, right? So there's this competition back and forth between various kinds of technologies for some of these hard to decarbonize sectors. But then I guess that just makes it easier to put the focus on the places that you really have to use hydrogen, right?
Well, I wonder too if there's a danger in, you know, as we sort of discussed, you can have people, the fossil fuel industry, getting behind hydrogen as this sort of idea of a bridge fuel, right? You know, replace natural gas, put it in aviation, and maybe it won't be green hydrogen. Do we run the risk then of not using driving innovation toward things like better battery storage, you know, lighter weight planes that can fly longer on a smaller battery, so therefore can do long range trips? You know, does sort of turning toward hydrogen, even green hydrogen, put us at risk for not innovating the way that we should to get completely off of, it's not fossil-based fuel if it's green hydrogen, but completely away from burning fuels? Because I assume there's still problems with that. Maybe, is there problems with the NOx when you have green hydrogen, or is that lessened?
So, I'll start with the question about NOx, because that's a little bit more discreet.
A lot to unpack, yeah.
Yes, one of the things that you need to watch out for when you think about using green hydrogen is whether or not your application requires burning it. Because if you're burning hydrogen, that very high temperature flame will likely produce a lot of NOx, even more health-harming NOx pollution than burning fossil methane, which has a lower flame temperature. And industry doesn't know how it's going to control all of these NOx emissions. I mean, to the point where you have trade associations for turbine manufacturers that say, oh, you know, if we're going to tackle the climate crisis and rely on hydrogen, maybe that means we should relax our NOx emission standards, which is terrifying because those standards are in place to protect our public health. The question about watching out for fossil fuel industry hype that could elbow out other cleaner options is a really good point. And it's not something I've seen in reference to the aviation sector. It's something that I've seen where industry is trying to put up barriers to adopting the clean electric options that are already available and on the market today. So, for instance, here in California, there's a growing realization, and I think for your audience in Massachusetts as well, there's a growing realization that the way to stop creating climate pollution from the appliances in our homes is to choose electric appliances and plug them into a clean electric grid. However, this is a huge threat to our local gas utilities. And so one of the pieces of rhetoric that's a new favorite for our gas utilities is to say, no, we don't need to transition to clean electric appliances. Instead, we'll figure out a way to put some hydrogen in our gas pipelines and people can burn that. And then we'll be clean too, which has a lot wrong with it. And I'd be happy to help unpack it.
Yes. A lot wrong.
Should I just dig in?
Yeah, no, I agree. There's a lot wrong with it. And I think, just as an aside, again, heading off on an orthogonal direction, your comment about the threat of getting off methane gas to use in our homes is a real one. People's jobs associated with keeping that. Here in Massachusetts, there's an effort to convert those methane pipes to geothermal water in a district and then have heat pumps run off geothermal water that comes in through the pipes and keeps everyone employed, which is a good thing. But tell me, unpack the thing about mixing hydrogen, because I think there's a lot people should, you know, it's a nice thing to know. And it may be hard. I guess one of our goals here is to have people hear for the first time these concepts, right, on our podcast. And then the second time they hear it, they say, oh, yeah, I heard something about that. So what's the issue with mixing hydrogen with your methane gas coming into your house? I mean, why is that a problem?
Well, the appliances in your house burn gas. And so just like the turbines we were talking about, if they are burning a gas with a higher flame temperature, then there's a threat of producing more NOx emissions and further degrading the indoor air quality in your homes.
And those NOx emissions are nitrous oxides, right? A combination of nitrogen and oxygen as you have this very hot hydrogen flame, they get made, right? And they're bad for you.
And probably particulate matter as well, I would assume.
So you would still have particulate pollution from the rest of the gas in the blend, because your appliances in your homes were designed for methane. They weren't designed to burn hydrogen. So there's a limit on how much a gas company can blend hydrogen into their gas supply. You know, even the gas company's own infrastructure was built for methane and not built for hydrogen. So there's a limit on how much they could feasibly deliver that, you know, each company would need to do a years-long analysis into how much hydrogen they could accommodate, how much extra money they would need to pour in their system to safely accommodate even a small amount. The bottom line, to avoid the unacceptable risk of your home appliances exploding by burning hydrogen, they're never going to be able to burn a significant amount of hydrogen. And if they reach the max of what people expect, you would only reduce climate emissions by about 7%. So you'd go through all of this trouble, spending years and years figuring out what you could pump into the gas system, pouring more money into the gas system to make it safe, all for this really tiny greenhouse gas benefit. Because, you know, it just wasn't built for it.
Yeah. And increasing health sort of potential, health threats.
Yeah. Exactly. And so so we want to call this out for the delay tactic and distraction tactic that it is. It's a false solution that the gas industry is trotting out in order to stymie all the efforts that are now being poured into figuring out, okay, how are we going to just get people off of gas?
And sorry, I just... restating, I mean, the the kind of lie or the deception involved in saying you're going to mix hydrogen in just to give people a scale is that as you start to add hydrogen to these methane pipelines that run under the street, the hydrogen can escape that pipeline much more easily for various physics reasons, right? The hydrogen gets out of the pipe much more easily. So the people that are selling you the gas would then have to like go through all of the pipes in their system and figure out how they're going to make sure they're hydrogen tight, right? So they're not leaking hydrogen. And that just gives you a scale of the work. And so when they say they're going to mix hydrogen, everything's going to be great. It's essentially deception, right? And if you know in your head that really they're never going to spend the money to do that much work, or else they're not going to worry about it and let your house blow up, right? I mean, that's if you know that, you're a little bit more skeptical when you hear these things, right?
Well, I mean, to be honest, the gas utilities would love nothing more than to spend your money upgrading their systems because that is how they make money.
Right.
But your basic point about hydrogen being the smallest molecule in the universe that is uniquely susceptible to leak from these pipes is a really important one, not only because hydrogen itself is a greenhouse gas that's very potent, but also because our gas infrastructure is already unacceptably dangerous. Your viewers in Massachusetts are probably already familiar with the kinds of explosions that can happen on the gas system. And if you think about blending in an even more flammable gas like hydrogen, it's not something that can happen without really careful study about where the vulnerabilities are in the system. And we know that hydrogen attacks materials. They're often used in pipelines and sealants. It causes something called embrittlement. And so it can take those existing safety risks and exacerbate them.
Wow. So I guess what I'm taking out of this is that green hydrogen is a good thing in certain applications, and that what we need to do as activists is to understand, you know, climate change turns everybody into something else. We all have to become scientists and understand what's going on with this hydrogen, where it can be used. And there are legitimate places where hydrogen is useful. But as you say, there are some places where we should be aware that it can be, the whole concept of hydrogen can be used to sell us a bill of goods that isn't really helping the climate, right? Isn't that a fair statement, Sarah?
Yes.
And I really liked the word you used, Sarah, distraction, right? We cannot let ourselves be distracted by this idea that this is a, you know, better way to go. Like our eyes should stay on renewable energy, wind, water, solar.
Electrify everything.
And electrify everything and get away from any use of hydrogen at all, green or not.
So we should put it down there. I mean, but Sarah, tell me, how can people find out more? How can they read your report? Where would they go look to get it? I highly recommend it, folks. It's a very interesting report. Where do they go?
Well, I want to thank you for putting the report on your show page, and you can also find it on the Earth Justice website, earthjustice.org. We go into so much more detail than we could have captured today. And we have a lot of great graphics that, you know, really help bring the information home.
Super, super. So you'll find a link to earthjustice.org and this report on the MCAN blog. It's at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions or suggestions about what things we ought to be covering, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know the good, the bad, and the ugly. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using Stitcher or any of the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask all of your friends to listen to us on their modern podcast distribution app, whether that's Spotify or Google, Apple, all those things. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, We have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that respects disadvantaged communities in order to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time. This is fascinating, useful, good stuff. Really appreciate your being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.